This is the Saturday Night Live, Friday Night Speaker Meeting, held at El Paseo Shopping Center, room 120, in San Jose, California, on May 29th, 30th, no, 29th, 1992. Tonight's 10-minute speaker is Betsy S., and the main speaker is Hugo S. from San Jose. The original recording and his copy are at the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. Thank you.
I'm Brian, and I'm an alcoholic. This is kind of better. I like being surprised. I like surprises. I don't know. This is my home group, and I've been attending this meeting ever since I got sober regularly. And I see a lot of people here tonight that I don't recognize, and I like that. We get a lot of new people at this group, and you know, a lot of people stay and a lot of people go, and some people just come to visit to check out the animals in the zoo sometimes, I think. But I want to welcome you, you know, to my home group, to Saturday Night Live group. I don't know. Prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nobody in my life, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years that wanted anything to do with me except the guys I was doing business with, doing some deals with. And today I got a lot of people in my life that care a lot about what goes on with me. And I was talking to a guy, you know, just before the meeting. There's a guy I love a lot, you know, and his 2-year birthday is on Sunday. And he's been away for a little while. I get worried when people who are real alcoholics wander away from Alcoholics Anonymous for any long period of time, because what eventually will happen is they'll decide they don't need AA or else they'll get thirsty. And you know, for a long time I fought the fact that I really cared as much about this guy as I did. And you know, thank God that I have the people in my life that I do, because what happened was, a couple of months ago, I was talking to a guy who will celebrate 26 years of continuous sobriety in a week or so. And he asked me about this guy, and I lit off on a tirade, a 15-minute tirade of profanity. And at the end of it all, he said, "You miss him, huh?" And, you know, he knew. You know, and what I have to recognize is that the people in my life today would never let me get that far away. You know, they'd hunt me down. And I didn't have that prior to coming here. You know, I don't know. I'm not a doctor or anything else. I don't know the clinical definition of alcoholic. The only definition I know is what's described in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and the doctor's opinion really didn't make a lot of sense the first time I read it, but I identify with it today. You know, I drank for the effect. The first drink, I didn't drink for the effect because I had no idea what the effect would be. My parents weren't big drinkers, and they still aren't today, but the second time I drank, the effect was so incredible, because the people I was hanging out with were all way cool before I got there, and I was out of place to begin with. I was out of my league completely, and you know, in a matter of 20 minutes, I was as smooth as anybody in the place, and I knew it, and I knew they knew it. That was the best part of it, was I was cool, now I drank. And you know, I can't tell you that I just turned into a scumbag right off the bat. The book says it's progressive and it's fatal. Alcoholism is progressive and fatal, and it's like my trip downward was progressive, and it was progressing rapidly at the end. But at first it was it was fun, you know, and we drank and we went to parties and we did this stuff. But it's funny, because since I've been sober, the book also says that more will be revealed. You know, and I've taken enough inventories here to recognize that at 15 years old in high school, I would have rather stayed in the creek and drank than gone to the dance with the rest of the guys. That's how it was. You know, we had more whiskey left. I wasn't through drinking. And these guys were saying, "Man, we're going to go chase these girls and do this stuff." And I was like, "Really? You guys sure wouldn't mind if I stayed here, would you? I would have rather drank." And it seemed like at 16, 17 years old, drugs were easier to get for me than alcohol. That's just the way it was. There was a lot of people taking drugs. So consequently, I took a lot of drugs. And I'm just an alcoholic. The big book talks about that, you know, and in my opinion, that's the definition of an alcoholic. Bill and Bob both took pills and drugs and everything else, and they were just alcoholics. So I'm just an alcoholic. I'm trying real hard today not to be different anymore. All my life I spent being different. My case is different. I don't have to do whatever it is you guys are doing. And I guess I'm grateful. Probably the single thing I'm most grateful for today, besides the friends and the people in my life, is the fact that right here, right now, I know exactly what's wrong with me. I have a disease called alcoholism, and that's it. And as long as I keep doing the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been doing for the last almost 2.5 to almost 3 years, I'll probably continue to stay sober. And it's amazing to me, you know, how quickly some things change in my life and how quickly some things don't change, or how slow some things change. You know, the things that have been going on the last couple of weeks in my life, I've been confronted with physical violence 3 times in the last, like, 2 weeks. You know, and I can't tell you that part of my life has changed that much. You know, my first thought is revenge, and don't turn your back too long. You know, and the amazing thing is that I'm able to talk to people and tell them what's going on. And to more amazing than that is the fact that I'm willing to take different actions today. The fact that I didn't hunt these guys down, you know, or spend the night sitting out in front of their place. And, you know, as a result of that, I'm probably not locked up in jail tonight, I guess. That's the reward, you know. That kind of lifestyle didn't get me any great rewards when I wasn't sober, and I doubt seriously that it would be conducive to good sobriety today. When I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous this time, you know, I came when I was 21 with a court card. I'd been in front of the same judge 4 times in like 3.5 months. Every time my blood alcohol level was over 0.20, which is really not a big deal, except if you're a judge seeing the same young kid coming in front of you. You know, it's pretty obvious to him that I had a problem with alcohol and there was something wrong. You know, I hear a lot of things about people recommending that people stay away from this group. People tell them don't go there. Well, I got to tell you, you know, there's a Superior Court judge, or actually a municipal court judge that I owe a great deal of thanks to, because he sent me to this group in particular. He insisted that every single one of my 30 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous be here. And what he told me was there was a lot of young people staying sober over there. He said, you might find some identity. And I can't tell you if I'd gone anywhere else that I wouldn't have stayed sober or that I wouldn't have heard the message. I really don't know. All I know is that I saw something. And I really didn't even know what it was when I saw it, but I knew that there was a place to go when you turned into some really scumbag guy and didn't want to drink anymore. And that's what I honestly thought. I remember Robert Reynolds talking. Oops. I remember Robert talking. And I remember my sponsor. And my sponsor, you know, today, he wasn't my sponsor at that time. You know, he was a jerk. The things he talked about, he was obnoxious and everything else. But I remember Robert talking more than anything else, because he talked about 3 things that I'd done. And he talked about selling himself to get drugs and alcohol. Prostitution is what he talked about. And I'm not going to tell you I stood out on a street corner and sold myself, but I prostituted myself before to get something I wanted. And I knew what he was talking about when he said it. And the sick part about it was that I was going like this, thinking everybody knew, and everybody else in the room was laughing. And that amazed me. I thought, there's something wrong here. You can't tell people these kind of things and have them laugh. I mean, it's not funny, first of all. You know, and I can't really tell you that I knew what was going on, but I knew there was a place to go if you didn't want to drink anymore, and that was all I knew. You know, in the next 4.5 years of my life, I lost it all. Inside, I lost it all. And I was dying, you know. I didn't have nothing left. A month before I got sober, I remember thinking, God, I wish this would end. I just wish it would end. And what happened was, I in a blackout, I hit a lady, and you know, what happened with that was I stayed in jail for a little while, and then he told me, you're going to go to prison. And the prison part wasn't as big a deal as the fact that I knew deep down inside I couldn't drink anymore. I was through drinking, and I didn't know what to do. And I got out of jail on Sunday night. I went in on Thursday. I got out Sunday night, and I didn't know what to do. I was having alcohol withdrawals, which is like a minor form of DTs, and I was sick as hell. And I took off walking. I wanted to just get out of the house. You know, I just couldn't hang out. And I walked down, and I walked to the meeting. I walked to an AA meeting, and I've been sober ever since that day. And that's my sobriety date is October the 26th, 1989. The guy who's going to talk up here tonight's been sober a lot longer than that. And these are the things that I need to see. I need to see that it works for longer than 2.5 years, or else I probably won't stay here tonight. And you know, the last 2.5 years of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, been up and down. There's been a lot of pain, and there's been a lot of hard work. And if you're new and you're not happy with what's going on in your life, you're not supposed to be when you come here. My sponsor told me a long time ago that the people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous and everything happens right away and they get everything back end up usually leaving. The people that struggle early on and continue to struggle and persevere are usually the ones that stay sober. And I don't know. Sometimes I used to wonder why do I have it so tough, man? Why does all this crap got to happen to me? And like, I'm sober. I'm not drinking anymore. Why does this crap have to happen to me? And if it means, you know, that by persevering that I might get to stay sober a little while longer, then I guess it's worthwhile, you know. But I know Hugo's had a lot of experiences that are the same, struggling in sobriety. I love to hear about people struggling in sobriety. I really do, because it makes me feel like maybe there's a chance that if I stay here, this stuff might change. And I guess the biggest gift of all in Alcoholics Anonymous is hope, you know? The fact that I don't got to do it like I used to do it anymore. Because that's a hard way to live, man. It gets tired. I get tired quick. I was out to dinner with some friends tonight, and we were talking about, I'm a speed freak, man. I love that thrill, that rush. And I used to think that I needed all those drugs to get me motivated to go and do all this crap I gotta go and do. I do more things in 1 week now than I did in 2 or 3 weeks when I was getting loaded, and I haven't taken any speed in a long time. And I have more energy doing it today, and I remember what I'm doing. And I was talking to this guy I went to dinner with, and about, you know, this last Geographic I did. You know, when I take drugs and alcohol of any kind into my system, I lose the decision or the choice, the power of choice, as to when I'm going to stop or where I'm going to be when I stop. You know, and I've come out of blackouts in Arizona with my truck running, not even knowing how I got there. And I got to remember those things when I start thinking that Alcoholics Anonymous is too much work to stay sober. You know, I got to remember, you know, a friend of mine says, from whence I came, which basically means I got to remember where I come from and the kind of life I lead when I'm drinking. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd encourage you to stick around long enough to find out what's really going on here. Because there's a lot more to Alcoholics Anonymous than a one-hour meeting tonight. You know, my life in sobriety is nothing like I thought it would be. And I'm grateful for that. I really am. Thank you.
Yeah. God damn. My name is Hugo, and I'm an alcoholic. And you're going to have to excuse a couple of things, is that I've been sick the last 2 days, so if you hear me a little bit coughing, I don't know if I'm going to last an hour, that's for damn sure. So I'll be also eating a little bit of menthol here. But I've been thinking about some of this because, I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't know that my drunkalog is really particularly interesting. I've tried to think of a few things to say, and the reality for me is that I've tried to think about all the dirty, slimy things that I could have possibly have done in all my drinking. And the absolute truth is that... trouble hearing? Okay. And the truth for me is that I was kind of a really boring drunk. I mean, that's really the truth. I was not the kind of a guy that went out and robbed banks. You know, that just wasn't what I did. You know, I didn't get up in the mornings and say, how am I going to destroy society? I thought about it in my head. But I never went out and did a hell of a lot. You know, one of the greatest problems that I had was the way that I dealt with reality. You know, I had a very difficult time dealing with the world. And part of that thing about difficulty dealing with the world led me, well, to a point where my only world was kind of a fantasy thing. You know, whatever I had between my ears was basically the truth, and that was it. Now, I want to also tell you that because this is a... I mean, this could be a really strange kind of an experience for an alcoholic, so I'm going to say this right off the top. I'm going to try to be as honest as I can with you guys. Because part of my past is, I've always been a person who has kept secrets. It's been the best thing that I've known how to do. What I've done the best probably has been, how can I keep a secret and how can I present kind of an appearance to look a little bit better than I really am? And because that's one of the things that I tend to do, I need to say out loud that I'm going to try just the very best I can to say the truth down to the very best I can. I think that when you have the kind of problems that I had with the world of fantasy and the world of reality, I don't know how it is with you guys, but I was a guy who was, ever since I can remember, I know that a lot of alcoholics, they say that, and I've heard this ever since I've been in AA, that some of the people who come into Alcoholics Anonymous had a lot of problems. Their problems didn't start until they took the alcohol. Well, I'm not that kind of a person. I'm the kind of a person that had a lot of grave emotional problems way before he took the first drink. So I'm the kind of a person that always had all these strange ideas about the world. I remember one time that I read about 40 or 50 books during the summertime, and I thought that was the world. They were just novels, and they were science fiction, but I almost expected flying saucers to come by any second. Or I don't know if it was really that I expected them as much as I wished they really would appear at any second. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard people say things like, you know, they felt that strange kind of a feeling that somehow they'd been dropped on this planet and that somehow, you know, there would be a flying saucer any second to pick them up. You know, that strange kind of alien kind of feeling, I've felt that ever since I can remember. I've also had with that kind of feeling also very deep feeling of absolute, total and complete loneliness. And some of you can understand this because not all alcoholics feel that way. Some do and some don't. Also with that was also a very deep, deep-rooted feeling that the world was my enemy and I was against it. And with that kind of combination of feelings, I don't know about you, but I built a world in which the only thing that I really had was like a house built out of cards. And all I knew was that at any moment, with the things that I knew, the whole world was going to topple at any second. I just was waiting for that particular wind to come by and just knock it down. And I spent all my life waiting for that. But what would happen would be that the wind would kind of blow just a tad. Some of the cards would kind of fall off and I'd get a chance to build them again. This kind of house, the only description that I have for it is that it was a kind of like a house of lies. Because with the world in which I lived, the only way that I could maintain a fantasy was by building better and better lies. I mean, that was the way I lived. If there was any point at all to not saying a lie and I could gain a great deal by not saying one, I still wouldn't do it. I would still lie anyway. There was just something about lying and getting something over on another person that made me feel superior and made me feel better. There was something about just being able to look somebody in the eye and say, you know what, this, and you know it's a fucking lie. There was just something about being able to do that. But you see, at the same time that that kind of world goes on, at the same time what was happening for me was that I knew that eventually it was going to start breaking. And I sometimes kind of compare, I got my strange things in my head, but basically my whole life was kind of like the Pink Floyd album, you know, the Wall. And I like to say this because it's really absolutely true for me. It's like if you pay attention, I don't know how you guys look at the album, but when I hear this album, I still, when I hear it, it's still my favorite album. When I hear it, I want to cry. It reminds me of the insanity, the madness, the incredible isolation in which I found myself all my life. You know how difficult it is to live life based on lies and that at any second somebody's going to discover you? I mean, one of the difficult things about that is you can't really have a true relationship with any other human being. And what happened for me was just like in that album. You know, and as you notice that as each song progresses throughout the album, there's another brick that is added to that wall that is the isolation between that person that is or will be an alcoholic and the world that is in front of them. And that's what was happening for me. The thing that was happening for me was, you know, first of all, there was this brick that was created by mother, this brick that was created by father, this brick that was created by this, by that, by the first girl that never wanted to kiss me, by whatever it was I felt that was somehow just rejection or abandonment or whatever the hell you want to call it. Well, what happened for me was that there came a point where this wall was fairly complete, at least for me. I felt really isolated, I could say. There's this way to describe it. And part of it, I think what was really scared me was the fact that I felt that at any second, because, how can I explain this? I was beginning to see little cracks on the wall. And if something happened at any second, it would scare me that anything could happen. And then in the nick of time, what happened for me was alcohol came in to rescue the day. And what happened was that once I took that first drink, the first thing I did was I stole the exams from my high school graduation. I mean, the first time out, it was great. I was able to make, to some degree, I'm just saying to some degree, I'm not saying like everything, but I was able to make to some degree the leap between the fantasy world and the reality. If before I had lied to some degree, all right, now I was able to lie and back it up with some more action. Because one of the things that happened for me when I drank was that I became fearless. All of a sudden I was getting into all kinds of really interesting situations. The first time, it was great. You see, I always thought I should be James Bond. I always thought that, you know, hey, Batman was me in disguise. I always wanted to be something like that. I remember even as a kid, I mean, as a child, I remember I was, the one thing I can say that I really did pretty good was that I was a really darn good student for a while anyway. And my father gave me a whole stack of comic books. And I grew up in Central America. So what you have to understand was I hardly ever got anything in English. Even though I'd spent a lot of time initially when I was a kid here in the United States, but my family moved to Central America. And I had my first girlfriend over there. I went through, you know, junior high, this whole thing. And my first year of junior high, I think it was the first year of junior high, or last of primary, I can't remember which one of the two, my father gave me a whole bunch of comic books as a prize for having some good grades. Well, part of the nice thing about that was that I really got into the incredible fantasy of comic books. And the incredible fantasy of that told me, I mean, when you need information, you know, when you need information, you get it from wherever you can get it. And the information that I got was that there could be something like a Superman, but there had to be some kind of elixir that could somehow make that happen. And what happened for me was that moment when I took alcohol, that elixir made it really true. I could do things that were just absolutely remarkable. I mean, I knew how to plan things. I realized that right away. I can plan some incredibly rotten things, basically. But I didn't know I had that devious mind. I knew I could get a lie over on somebody to some extent, but, I mean, this was major range kind of stuff. I remember the first thing that I really felt, I finally had accomplished, I had arrived. That doesn't mean a lot, but at least in the culture where I was growing up, this meant a great deal. And what I did was, now you have to understand, everybody there who has any bit of, just the slightest bit of money, or any kind of political power, has a great deal of bodyguards. I mean, that's just the way you live over there. I remember all the time, you know, you just wonder who died that day. I mean, just, you know, you just kind of, which is kind of sad. You know, you just sort of like, I guess it becomes a normal way of living. But you see, one of the things that I, and this is just something that I happened to have done with alcohol, was the first thing that I really knew that I had arrived was that the vice president of that country, I forgot his name. Well, whatever his name was. I knew his daughter was having a 15-year-old coming-of-age party. You know, it's not 16-year-old like it is in the United States. It's 15-year-old. And I decided that I was going to crash that party. And if you know the amount of bodyguards and things that are going on in that place, you just don't do that kind of shit. You just don't do it. And part of what happened for me was it just seemed like the most natural thing. You know what it is? You take that boost, man, and you glow. And you know it's possible, man. I mean, all the doubts, the confusion, the turmoil, it's gone. All that exists is that moment. You know, like it says in the Bible, we live extemporaneously, and here we go. I didn't measure anything. I just saw the door. And I headed for that door, and an old couple was there right there. I went up to them. I took their invitation. I guided them. They didn't know what was going on. Cracked through the door, showed them the invitation, passed through with them, and it was over. It was done. And I got in. Now, if that would end, that would be the only part. That would be okay. This is so weird. Once I got into the party, the nice thing about this kind of being a drunk man, oh man, I went to the guy who was the vice president, Ronaldo Puerto España, that was his name. I went up to him and I said, "How you doing, man?" I'm just like that. And I started talking to him, and he didn't know who I was, but he wasn't willing to say, "I don't know who you are." And we had about a 3-5 minute conversation, and I told him my name several times. And by the end, you know, he said, "Well, thanks for coming over. And, you know, you met somebody," and he presented me to several people. 2 days later, I went to his office, and I got a letter of recommendation from him. Honest to God, I still have that letter today. What I did was I went to his office, and he said, about 2 minutes to see me. He kind of remembered who I was, and by the time I left, he canceled an appointment, and I stayed for a long time. No shit. This is an alcoholic who knows how to drink, okay, and knows how to lie really, really well. Now, what happens for me, as I said, is that I can build these little situations, and what happens is it still doesn't make me eligible for living life. I can have nice little tiny adventures of any kind, but it doesn't mean that I know how to have a relationship with another human being. All it means is that I got something over somebody, and it doesn't mean a hell of a lot more than that. And so what happened for me was, I mean, I went through a whole bunch of different things. I mean, God darn it, I mean, thing after thing after thing after thing. And what happened was I still didn't know how to look. I mean, just, what do you do? I mean, what I learned in Central America, I don't know. I don't care if it was a matter of culture or it was a matter of drinking or whatever. I learned that to be a man was basically two things. This was what I was taught, and this is what I learned, and I believed it for some time. And that is that if I was going to be a man, there was two things you did. One is you drank a lot, and the other one is you screwed as many women as you can get. I mean, that's what I was taught. My father did it. My grandfather did it. That's just the way it was. And what happened for me was that, I don't know how you are as alcoholics, but a part of me, because I did read a lot of different things, I had a suspicion that maybe this was not the best way to live, but I didn't know how to live a different way. And as the alcohol turned also into drugs for me, and I started combining things a great deal, you know, I could pretend for a long time that everything was okay living my life that way. It was okay that if I only had a relationship for a short amount of time and that I couldn't really talk to somebody outside of sex, that maybe it would still be okay. You see, alcohol and drugs gave me the ability to just forget sometimes, to be bold sometimes, to just somehow just move on and pretend that the next moment might be just a little bit better if luck held out. But you see, what happens is that it's still going to be a lie, and that's what it was for me. What happened for me was that by the time, as I said, you know, my past is a little more boring than probably my drug alcohol is a lot more boring than my sobriety. My sobriety does some really interesting things. I mean, a lot more interesting things than you could ever do. What happened for me was that I found myself in a situation, I'd say about 8 months before I got, well, this is like the last time I came into AA. I had come into Alcoholics Anonymous the first time in 1977, and what happened was I just thought it was just ridiculous. And what happened for me was that I came to meetings just strictly for one reason and one reason only, and the reason was basically I would come to meetings whenever I felt that I really was an alcoholic. And I came here to find the differences. We all different come for different reasons. I came for that reason. I would come in, I'd look at you, and I'd say, God damn it, I can't be like that. And I'd leave. And every time I had a doubt, I would come to another meeting. And that was the only time I came to meetings. And what happened was I finally drank. Well, by the time I came back, and that was in 1983, at about a few months before I came back, I had met a gal, a very fascinating girl. You see, I'm the kind of alcoholic that kept a lot of secrets. You know, and I'm fond of saying that one of the ways, probably my greatest fear, one of the greatest fears that probably I had, and this is just a way to explain it, was that I was afraid that sometime if I woke up in the morning, I would get up and I would find on my lawn a newspaper with gigantic letters that would say, Hugo has been discovered. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying? That was my greatest fear. Of all the fears I can think about, that was the it, and I know it would happen any second. What I did was I had a tactic that I developed as a good alcoholic. My tactic was, I'll get a lot of people to share different secrets with, and nobody will really know me. Anybody recognize this? And so what I did was I shared with a lot of people little bits and pieces, just to get the steam off. And if you recognize people in Alcoholics Anonymous who come in and stay around without doing major things, that's exactly what they do. Sometimes they do it by saying it at the podium, and sometimes by sitting down and sharing a little bit with another person, but they never get into the steps. That's what I was doing. It was sort of like putting a Band-Aid on a very serious wound, but never doing anything serious. Nothing ever to really take care of the problem. And what happened for me was I found this gal who was a perfect alcoholic. She was just great. Anything I suggested she would do as far as, you know, substance abuse. It was great, the perfect companion. And I felt in this affinity that is this haze, this strong connection of something, that somehow I could tell her everything about me. Now, in my mind, I was telling her everything about me, but I really didn't even know who I was, so I don't know how much that really counts. So the reality of it was that I told her as much as I could and guessed about the rest, because that was all I could do. And what happened was, it was enough for me to have made an investment in her that when she decided to leave, and if some of you ever break up, this is probably the most terrifying thing about somebody leaving me. And I found out that, so for some alcoholics, this is still the worst thing. When she left, I felt that a part of myself had been literally ripped out. Now, I'd never felt that terrible since I was a little kid. And part of the reason was because, and I found this out a lot later, but it will show you to what extent it was that certain things, the way they functioned with me. The reason that it felt so horrible was because this woman knew something about me, and despite what she knew about me, good and bad, she was still making a decision to leave, and when somebody really knows you, then it really hurts. Does that make sense? It's like if they don't know you, who cares? I mean, it's only a lie anyway. But if somebody really, 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 really knows you and leaves, well, no. I mean, they're going with a full knowledge of who you really are. And there could be nothing more terrifying, nothing more desperate, nothing more... God, it was horrible. And what happened for me was, I don't know why. I didn't go to a psychiatrist. I didn't go to a therapist. I don't know. I didn't have much friends anyway, but what I did was I, for some strange reason, picked up the phone and called Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you why, because I really don't know. I think that to some extent, maybe there was some connection somewhere, maybe kind of how, I don't know, that said to me, you know, maybe there's a problem with drinking here. I don't know. All I know is when I picked up the phone and I came to a new meeting at Saturday Night Live, that was May 23rd, 1983. And I... Wrong. It had been one day since I drank, so it was May 24th. And I walked into the meeting, and the first thing that happened was I tried to slip in. The meeting had already started, and I bumped over chairs and tripped, and everybody turned around and saw me. I didn't like that. And of course, if you understand the pain that you feel when you break up with that kind of sorrow, well, God darn it. I can tell you guys. I mean, I was willing. What do you guys want me to do? I mean, I'm dying here. What do you want? God damn it, help me. 2 days later, who the hell are these guys, man? I mean, 2 days later, I swear to God, I didn't want anybody. I saw everybody was just horrible. I mean, I started major judging all around me. Now, however, the nice thing about me is that I can be a little bit stubborn, and when I hurt, I hurt. You know, the 12 by 12 talks about the fact that we're grandiose, oversensitive, and childish. And that's me. So oversensitive hit me like a button on a twin starter. I mean, I just went crazy and just pain all the time, gushing pain and gushing pain. Oh, can I say something? I'm gushing pain and gushing pain. Oh, agony, agony. Pain, pain every time. Everything was pain. But at 30 days, I got a chance to chair my first meeting. And I've got to tell you, they love me. They absolutely love me. My first meeting that I chaired was over here at... Minnesota, the Yolanda Club on Minnesota Street. I had 30 days of my 30-day chip, and I got that hot sucker, man. I hit it in my palm, and I knew I was big time now. I hadn't done the steps or anything, but I was big time. And I chaired the meeting, and I started a controversy right away because I said profanity. Yes, and an old-timer got up and said, people who are sober do not say profanity. And being the kind of manipulative kind of guy that I am, what I said was, does that mean I have to leave? And then everybody said, no, no, he said to leave, leave him alone. Good. I started controversy right there. I loved it. What I can tell you, I had a great time. My first 90 days, I chaired an incredible amount of meetings. I don't know how many meetings I chaired. But, you know, when you got that much pain and you have a lot of alcoholics and that's all they can feel when they don't want to get into the solution, hell, you're popular. You know, what is it? You know, misery loves company, and that's what I got. So, you know, I was hot to trot. Well, what happened for me at about 90 days was I was in a meeting on Saturday Night Live, and there was this guy who had quite a bit of time. I think he had about 17 years at the time. And he was talking to another guy who had about 14 or 15 years at that time. And of course, I was about to chair another meeting. Okay. And they didn't see me as I sneaked up for a cup of coffee. And I heard a really incredibly... I mean, this would change a lot of things for me. This guy came up and he was talking to the other guy. And he said, do you see who's chairing again? Yeah, I saw who's chairing again. You know what? He said, I hope he gets drunk. Well, I'll tell you one thing, guys. It changed some things for me radically. I mean, radically. Up to a certain point, what had happened to me during those first 30 days, and I don't know how it happens for you, but for me, I was jazzed. Sure, I hadn't done the steps. Sure, there was a whole bunch of things. I was hot. Maybe it was all BS anyway. But the point was that I felt that I had connected with something in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had never connected before. And at 90 days, when you hear somebody say something like that, I don't know how you are, but it hurt like a mother. I went there, and what I did was I cheered the meeting the best I could. I fumbled. I didn't know what I was feeling. I mean, I'm the kind of a person that has never really known what he feels ever. Besides the fact that I never knew who I was, I just didn't know what it was that I was feeling. Sometimes I suspected it might be anger, then I'd just reach out. But I just didn't have that kind of connection. And so what happened for me was I did the best I could about chairing that meeting. And I went home. I didn't even know how upset I really was. I mean, I just tore up the place. I mean, just tore up everything at the place that I was living. But I made a decision that night. And I owe those guys, okay? I owe those guys. I made two decisions. The first decision that I made was, and I'm going to say just the way I felt it, and if you don't like it, too bad. What I said to myself was, no motherfucker in this program is going to kick me out, this is my seat, and they'll have to kill me. And from that moment on, I didn't care who liked me or who didn't like me. That seat was mine, and I was going to do whatever it took to keep it. The second decision I made as a consequence of that about a week later was, to the very best of my ability, I was going to try to make friends with these two assholes. I did not want to be like them. You see, there's certain things that happened to me in my recovery that made a great difference. Another thing that happened to me was at Ferris and Spencer. And this had to do more with spirituality and religion. These are things just that really affected me in my recovery at the very beginning. I was at Ferris and Spencer, and there was this guy, they were talking about spirituality. And not still sure about what the difference was between spirituality and religion. What happened was, this guy, I can remember exactly the years he had, and I still, to this day, he does not talk to me. He had 19 years of recovery at that time. And this guy got up and said, I mean, especially after this guy, and I had made a decision of that magnitude, he should never have said this. What he said was, and by the way, I need to tell you that the God of my understanding is Christ. And what I believe is that if you are not saved through him, you will get drunk. What I did was I blasted this mother, I mean, to the best of my ability, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, it may not have been right. One of the things that happened also was I almost wanted to get drunk. I felt the need. In the first 90 days, I had not really felt that. But I felt a strong need to drink. This couple, I don't remember their names, an older couple, took me aside and explained to me for the first time ever that I could ever understand it, the difference between religion and spirituality. Since that day, man, I'll tell you, a lot of things have been easier just for that one simple explanation of a couple that didn't know me worth Adam and took the time to explain something like that to me. To me, from what they explained, it was a very simple thing. There's a difference between religion and there's a difference between spirituality. And the difference is very simple. When a religion, what it does is it gives you a package. This is exactly what they explained it to me. They give you a little package and they say, Hugo, do you want to be a nice little Jewish boy? Here's your little package, okay? Now, you want to be a nice little Catholic boy? Here's your little package, okay? Now, you know exactly what to do. You know exactly where to go. You know exactly what to become. You know how to think. You know how to feel. And if you don't, you're screwed. Okay, you go to hell or you do something worse, okay? But here's your package. And what they told me was that spirituality was a little bit different. That maybe spirituality was about the fact that it would be probably the most difficult road that I could take. And I love that. I love challenges. It was going to be a difficult path because I had to make choices. I couldn't just go up and just take something because somebody just said it. That Alcoholics Anonymous was built on the fact that certain people told you their experience, but I had to make up my mind what I believed in and what I didn't believe in. That part of what Alcoholics Anonymous said to me that was that that spiritual path meant it was my path. Yes, we all coincide and come together, and we all are going through that thing, which is maybe a sense of completion and becoming better human beings, but in the end, it's my path. And I have no right to impose myself on yours. The best that I can do is to share with you whatever I have. And the best that you can do is share with me what you have. And somehow in that mixture, what happens is I get a personal experience about what God is. Not a foreign, imposed, God knows what the hell, but I get something that is personal to me and I feel it. And what happens, I don't have to borrow anything. I can feel it. Yeah, I remember somebody else that affected me very early in my recovery was Father Tom W. God knows why the hell he just finished talking at a conference in downtown San Jose, and he took me aside and he talked to me for God knows how long. I mean, he being a priest and everything, why hadn't he ever been able to stay sober? And he explained to me exactly the same thing this couple explained to me. He said that as a priest, he had never been able to stay sober because he had never had a personal experience about what God was about. You see, I never knew that. I felt that if I did what you wanted me to do, I mean, I fought you and I wanted it, and I didn't know where to put it all together. The nice thing about having a spiritual path was that I got the chance to make choices. And the most important thing for me was I got the chance to make mistakes and learn from them. That's what spirituality is about for me. Now, of course, it didn't go hunky roses all forever, at least not in my recovery. You know, I don't know how people do their recovery. But I can tell you about the top, I made a lot of mistakes at about three. I used a lot of sex in my first 2 years, probably. not that it's unknown. A lot of people keep on reminding me of all the mistakes I made. No, it's really true. You know, I remember, practice. I heard Surfer Chris here, and Randy P. Oh, this is killer. Was it? Yeah, it was Surfer Chris. I loved him because he was always rebellious. I thought he was like the Fidel Castro of AA or something, you know. He was always so rebellious. You know, I loved it. I didn't always agree, but I liked the attitude, you know. He hated everybody. that really excited me, you know. He understood my emotions, you know. But one of the things he said was that, you know, if you took the book, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you could justify anything you wanted if you took things out of context. And you can. I mean, if you really try to justify any kind of behavior, including sexual behavior, you can justify almost anything. Of course, if you take it out of context, that's the problem. But I heard that, and that justified a lot of things that I did for about a couple of years. But of course, what happened for me was that, of course, again, what was happening was, in recovery, I was building a house out of a deck of cards, and things were getting, again, not very good. And it came to a climax for me. You see, I talk a lot about relationships whenever I talk, because that was the single most difficult area for me. Major source of problems for me. The only way that I can tell you that if there's any sense of how to do relationships better today is only because of the incredible amount of mistakes that I've made. If you don't make mistakes in recovery, I'll tell you this right away, guys. If you don't make mistakes in recovery, you're not living life. I mean, that is a fact. And what I can tell you is that probably for me, the thing that I can tell you about my recovery has been that I made as many mistakes as I could make until I couldn't make them anymore. I mean, I've never been. I don't know why people are so weird. I don't know. I am not a pillar of virtue by a very long shot. I mean, not even the closest, most remotest possibility. The only reason I don't do a lot of things that I did before was because I don't want the consequences of it. I mean, it's really, really very basic for me. I mean, at 3 years of recovery, I mean, I got into a relationship that was probably more painful than the first one. And, I mean, just to give you an idea of how sick a person can still be in recovery, and this is doing the steps, okay? Doing the steps, doing the best I could. And I was in service constantly. I was sponsoring guys right and left all the time, ever since I can remember. And despite that, I found myself in a... Oh, Chris is here. Boy, oh, boy. I don't know if he remembers this, but... I found myself on Denny's Restaurant on Hamilton with a girlfriend that I thought I was really in love with. And this woman didn't appreciate me enough. And she took her dinner and threw it at me in the restaurant. Now, when you are a person that's used to keeping secrets and keeping the best attitude you can, I was very cool, guys, I need to tell you. I wiped myself clean. I paid the bill. I went outside and wondered if she was upset. I found her, storming out. I finally got her to get into the car, and I said, I will take you home. At least I will take you home. And she said, okay, I'll get in your goddamn car. She got inside the car, and inside she said, I changed my mind. I said, no, you haven't changed. And she tried to kill me. She started beating me. She took out this, it went on. And it just clicked on me that maybe it was over. I have a hard time with relationships. You see, the way that I was taught, you see, I've learned some lessons from my childhood, man, that, I mean, only alcohol could allow them to keep on going for as long as they did. I mean, that is the only thing that perpetuates the lie of living the way. You know, that's the only thing. And for me, I'll tell you, I am a person. Hey, I have no connection with what people feel sometimes, and especially with myself. I have always confused things like, for example, lust with love. What do you want, you know? What do you want? I didn't know. I just thought, you mean you have sex and God darn it. I mean, aren't you supposed to be in love forever? Well, no, I guess, huh? Yeah, they kept on leaving. Well, the thing for me was that, you know, I got in Alcoholics Anonymous the opportunity to learn that things are a little bit different. And probably part of the reason is, first of all, I didn't drink. So that means I can't hide from my emotions. And two is I didn't run away from the groups that knew me. I have had to endure some rejections in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been just appalling. After this relationship was over, I mean, you know, they say, we all love you. Don't worry. We'll forgive everything you do. Oh, we will love you. Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll believe that someday in some other kingdom, man. I'll tell you, after that breakup in the relationship, I mean, a lot of people were just split. I mean, people used to talk to me all the time. She would no longer talk to me. You know, I mean, they took her side. And I remember some of the people who are friends of mine today, by the way. They changed their attitude, thank God. But, you know, they just would not talk to me. They wouldn't say anything to me. I mean, it was horrible. I felt, remember, I'm oversensitive, grandiose, and childish, okay? So what that meant for me was that I felt like an outcast. There's a word, you know, ostracized. Anybody hear that before? That's the way I felt. That's why it's, for me, it's so important. This is for me. One of the most important things that I try to do is never judge anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Simply because, God damn it, man, what right do I have? I mean, I've done everything that I could do sober. I have no right to judge anybody. But on top of that, I also know how it feels to be ostracized just because you make a mistake. If I did that to somebody else, it would be like doing it for me and condoning that the next person would also do it to me sometime in the future, and I don't like that. Now, boy, oh boy, I can't believe this is a trip. Well, anyway, all I can tell you is basically, recovery has been a trip. I mean, out of that breakup and that relationship, great things came out of it. I've learned ever since, whatever somebody's breaking up in a relationship, that it's the best thing that ever happened to them, and it's for very basic reasons. I think that for an alcoholic, and especially an alcoholic of my type, there's nothing better than intense amounts of pain sober to move the bullshit. That is a fact for me. If I know that I am not capable of changing on my own, and I'm not always capable of it, there is nothing better than to get into a relationship and feel pain and go out and change. That has always been the case for me. One of the nice things that happened, I don't want to leave you with the perspective that I'm totally screwed nowadays, you know, hell. There have been some better moments. And some of the better moments is that usually, this is really weird for me, I can make some choices in regards to relationships today that are really different for me. Among the very strange things that I've learned to do in sobriety, some of the men will relate, I don't know how the women feel about this thing, but I could pretend to be a friend to a woman before. Pretend. I actually believe that I can be a friend today. You know, like, how do you be a friend, right? I mean, how do you be a friend? Well, how about sharing? You know, that's as simple as it gets. Why don't you just tell them how you feel? Instead of, I don't know how you guys do when you date, but you know, I remember my sponsor telling me that the reason that I lied so much, and this was the greatest example of what lying is for an alcoholic. And this was the first sponsor I had. My first sponsor was Mike O.B., and some of you knew him before he died. And he told me that lying was like a mask, and that this mask, every time I put it on, was confirming to me that I definitely was not good enough. And that whatever I was living in, whatever I was, just was not good enough. And if you notice what lying is, it's basically that. I remember going out on dates, and things that I would do in dates were very simple. Well, it's not good enough to make this amount of money. You know, I make $1 million a week. Oh, and by the way, this is not really my car. It's that one over there, but he's borrowing it right now. These things, because lies make the difference between where I think I should be and where I know I am. The only way to fill that gap up for me had always been only one thing. A lie and alcohol that sustained the lie, and that was it. I could never bridge that gap between where my mind wanted me to be and the fact that I found myself in a very strange situation with nothing else. And that's the way that I would bridge it. Now, if you have that kind of thing where you're feeling that you're not just good enough or that it's not coming out the way you want it to, one of the first things that I did was that I kept on lying even in recovery. Because I don't know about you, but you know, it's, like I said before, it's very hard to change tactics, to change, you know, ways of doing things unless there's a reason to do it. One of the best things that I feel that for me that helped me out the most, and I think different things kind of fit people in a different way, I really believe, and this is something that I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that each person comes in here for one mission. I don't, this is just what I believe. Remember, it's just my opinion. Each person comes in here for one reason only, and that reason is to become complete in some way. I think that that great hunger that I always felt, that loneliness, that sense of need of some kind, had always been the need to become complete. And what happened for me, was that I needed to find what it took for me to be able to become a complete person. And what I noticed in meetings was that people who, for example, were very violent, what they needed to do when they came into Alcoholics Anonymous is that they would need to learn how to be gentle. And that's what completed them. And for people like me who were great people pleasers and chameleons who just did whatever the need demanded, needed to learn how to be able to stand up for what they believed. And that's what it took for me to become complete. But I believe that all of it comes together in that process, becoming a complete human being. Now, how we get there is just, I think, is a different thing for each one of us. Part of it for me, part of what helped me, the most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous has been sponsorship. There's absolutely nothing that I can talk about more for me than sponsorship. Maybe the best way that I can explain that, and maybe so I can give you the feeling of what it meant for me. Men had always been my enemies. They were the competition for that fix that was a woman. Okay? Well, what happened for me was that when I started sponsoring men, not women, what happened for me, when intimacy happened, I didn't have the option of sex. I mean, as a guy, what am I going to do? I mean, what could you do? I mean, the only thing I could do was share back. That's what happened to me in sponsorship. I didn't have the option that when intimacy started happening, when this guy was telling me things that were just too uncomfortable because they were talking about their emotions, about their past, what happened was all of a sudden I didn't have the option of having sex with somebody to just cover up the fact that I didn't know how to do it. And what happened was I felt for the first time, I was able for the first time to be able to share back at a level that I had only practiced with my sponsor up to that moment. And so what happened for me, I was able to, because of sponsorship, to be able to practice this more and more and more until it's become a regular habit for me. Now, I want to share one, probably this I've never really, part of it I've shared, but I don't really have this much goddamn time. But I'm going to share, this is going to get weird, guys, so here it comes. Strange things happen in recovery. And I'm going to share one of the weirdest things that has ever happened to me. You see, when I'm talking about all these changes that happen in sobriety, or that have happened to me in sobriety, one of the things that I guess I felt that I was kind of missing was that sense of not really feeling that there was a sense of completion in me. Well, I want to tell you something that happened to me at 5 years of sobriety. And just this may or may not give somebody hope. I don't know. Or it may just totally ruin your sobriety forever. But I'm going to tell you what happened, and then I'm going to share a part that I've never shared before because it just was the weirdest thing that I have ever experienced here. And what happened was that about 5 years of sobriety, I find myself at a Monday 8 o'clock meeting at Saturday Night Live in the old Campbell Community Center. And what happened was probably the best friend I have ever had up until that moment was chairing that meeting. And she was one of two people... in my recovery, who, despite the fact that I felt that I was fighting against you when I made that decision that nobody would take my seat, this was one of the two people, her and a gentleman by the name of Paz, were the two people that I felt that still wanted me to come back no matter what kind of things I set up at the podium or how I acted. They were the only two people that I really, really felt, really cared whether I came back. And what I found out, of course, was that that's all I needed. I didn't need the whole room to love me. I just needed two people to love me unconditionally, and the rest could go to hell. I just needed to know that somebody, anybody, could really try to just understand that I'm not perfect, and that maybe, just maybe, I was just trying the best that I could. And these two people gave me that. This woman, and this was after Paz passed away, she was chairing this meeting, and I'll do the best I can to describe this because it was really strange. I was in the back of the room, to the side where the room kind of was at an angle, if you'll remember where that was at. It was like a little angle, and there was like three or four chairs, and I was sitting in one of those chairs. And for a second there, I was hearing her, and I realized how much I really loved this woman. I mean, this is the woman that I really learned how to be intimate with another woman with. I mean, I learned how to be a friend without sexual interest, just because she's a human being, because she was a good person. And I realized as she was talking, that she had absolutely no obligation to love me. What I realized, it was just like all of a sudden, it just started coming into me, all these emotions. And I realized that she had not only no obligation to love me, but she didn't have to like me. that I realized that she didn't have the obligation to. She didn't even have to be nice to me if she didn't want to. All of a sudden I realized that I didn't even have the right to make her. I didn't have the right to make her love me, to care for me, or nothing. And what I started feeling at that second, I felt a sense of such complete loneliness. The best, I don't know how to describe it, guys, but the feeling that I had, I felt like the whole room had got kind of silent, and all I felt was like everything was very, very distant, and all that really existed was that emotion. I had never felt, I can't even remember the time that I felt that alone. And what happened for me was, you know, thank God she didn't call on me. We said the Lord's Prayer, we grabbed our hands, and I just tore out. And I started getting onto to 17 to get onto 280 to go where I lived. And I had to pull over because the emotions were so intense. And what happened was I threw up. And, well, I got back into the car and I started crying in the car. I mean, it's really tough for me to cry. It still is today. And I got in the car and I went to where I was living at that time. And when I got there, I went to a mirror. This is where I had been drunk so many times before. And I went to this mirror, I looked at the mirror, and I stared at it for a while. And I don't know where this comes from, guys, but this is just, you know, what happened for me. Was I said to myself, you know what? Maybe nobody loves you. Maybe nobody cares. Maybe nobody has the obligation to care. But you know what? I don't know where this came from. All I know is that I love you. The strange thing about that for me was that I believed it. That was the first time I have ever since I could remember, that I could ever have said to myself, I love you, and meant it. Up until then, what it was for me was simply pretending. They said to me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, fake it until you make it. I faked it, and I tried to believe it so hard. I tried to believe that maybe there was some part of me that maybe, you know, maybe was okay. But down deep inside, I always felt it was all bullshit anyway. That somehow, again, I would be discovered, and even myself, I would find out that it was a lie and that I had just been pretending, even despite the best efforts that I could make. Well, what happened for me was, from that moment on, for me, what happened was that from that moment on, it just would not be the same again. It just has never felt that lonely again. Now, what happened after that was really weird, because I've shared this part, you know, like forever. You see, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous as an atheist, so all this kind of shit is really weird to me. I mean, religious experiences, spiritual experiences, all that kind of stuff to me comes under flying saucers. That's the way I've always felt. And what happened for me was during the next 3 days, and my sponsor is, you know, he can back this up, it was the weirdest thing. I tried to talk to people, and people couldn't understand what the fuck I was talking about. I would try. It was really, really weird. I don't know what it is. But I would talk too fast. I would talk really weird. And I just decided to shut up. I was getting really embarrassed. So what I did was I finally managed to feel that I was calm enough. And I talked to my sponsor, who's still the sponsor I have today. And what he said to me was, you know, Hugo, probably what you had was a spiritual experience. And I said, yes, sure. You know, it's weird, but, you know, it's not that weird. So I went to my grand sponsor to get a second opinion. And my grand sponsor said, I liked his answer a lot better. And basically what he said, you know, I think what you had was a spiritual experience, but if it doesn't bring anything good into your life, it's probably just bullshit. So that I liked. And I believe that that's really true. I think that a lot of people go around, I think, especially when we're new, you know, I think that we mistake the shakes that you get from drinking so much coffee as a religious experience. And I don't know why they do that from the very beginning. A person walks in and, you know, the first thing they do, load them up with coffee as if that was going to solve anything. You know, but I think that, and then, of course, the first thing that happens is, you know, a person just wakes up, and the moment they can give a coherent sentence, you know, I think they're eligible to start talking, you know. And so they put them up as a speaker meeting. But the reality for me is that once a religious experience happens, or religious of any kind, I'm the kind of a person that never had, I mean, except for this one thing, I never really had a flash. I've been the kind of a person that has had what you call an educational variety kind of experience. That's my main thing. And that is what I solidly believe in. But I can tell you one thing that I really believe in with all my heart. Irregardless of how that that spiritual experience happens one way or another. I really believe that it is possible to change in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't have a grasp of where I come from at this point, well, you don't. But you see, I know where I come from and how inadequate I've always been. I know what it's like to live my life in such a way that everything is a lie. I know how to feel that I have to just pretend to be able to get along. I know what it's like to not have the slightest clue of who you are and just wish you could be anything but what you are. I know what it's like to feel really alone, and I think that some of you do also. And if you're the kind of a person that's done some of the things that I've done in my past and have felt the shame that I have felt about the things that I've done, it's very difficult sometimes to believe. It's very difficult to believe sometimes that it could be any different, even when we get sober. What I really, truly, absolutely believe is that irregardless of our past, we can get better. Irregardless of the past, we can become incredible things in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe this. I have not shown off today about some of the things that I've accomplished in my recovery, but I can tell you stuff, guys, that for me are absolutely incredible and don't depend on my lying about them being true. I can show you some of the things that I've accomplished that are almost incredible for an alcoholic of my type, including things that I thought that was just absolutely the stupidest things to do. Like, for example, for 8.5 years, pay a third of my salary to make amends for everything that I've ever stolen. That is fucking difficult. Do things like, for example, make amends to people that you know you hate with all your guts and you just want to kill, like my father. And to find out that today I have a relationship with my father that is incredible. To go to Central America, and I've shared all this stuff to you with you before. These are exciting things for me. To go to Central America and just go out there and have a blast and literally get shot, get lost in the jungle and think it's wonderful. That was incredible. And the most important thing, I don't get tired of sharing this last thing because I think it's just exciting for me, is that 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when we had that picnic down at Life had their picnic, and I love to share this. It's not a big deal, you guys, but to me it was like the most incredible thing that something has changed in me. You see, I have tried to keep two things from ever happening to me. Maybe you get an idea of why. One is I swore I would never get married. Ever. Because I didn't want any woman that was related to me at all in any way to have the kind of situation that my father and my mother had. I didn't want them to. I would want her to have what he had given her, and I knew that I had become like him. The second thing that I swore would never happen was I would not have kids. Because if I had kids, they would go through the same shit I was sure that I had gone through. And I didn't want that on anybody. Well, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and some of you know this, and it's still exciting, I thought it was about time to do it. And I went up, and TJ, and you know her, had this baby in the park. And I went up, guys, and I picked up for the first time in my life a baby. 4 months old. And I'll tell you, I thought, I was terrified. The reason I was terrified was because, I felt that if I dropped them, I had to pay for them. It wasn't that. I have to share with you, if there would really be a religious or spiritual experience or whatever the hell you want to call it, it was that moment. I can still feel it right now. It's that moment when I saw into that baby's arms and I knew that God existed. I felt, whoa. I mean, I can feel it right now, man. That wasn't what I was scared about, okay? Is what I was going to feel when I held that baby is what I was terrified about. And you know, I think the mother was terrified I wouldn't give him back. You know? These things are exciting. I'm going into another adventure soon. You know, I shared it with 3-4 people, and since they don't support me, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. But I'm going to do it because it's right for me and because life can be exciting, for crying out loud. It can be a blast. But the point is, I have to get into the middle of it and enjoy it. I'm tired of being a timid little shit that doesn't know where he's going, and I want to go out there and just have a blast, man. Life is too goddamn short, and I want to live my life as if my hair were on fire. That's the way I want to live it. And nobody, I mean, I don't know of anybody, just the way that I fought for that seat, and I said, you know, nobody's going to take it from me. Nobody. You know what? This feeling that I have for a living right now, I'm not going to let nobody take that from me either. And especially not a drink. And that's the way it's going to go. So thanks.